The Case of Mr. Fogart by Arthur Morrison. Almost the only dogmatism that Martin Hewitt permitted himself in regard to his professional methods was one on the matter of accumulative possibilities. Often when I have remarked upon the apparently trivial nature of the clues by which he allowed himself to be guided, sometimes to all seeming in the very face of all likelihood, he has replied that two trivialities, pointing in the same direction, became at once, by their mere agreement, no trivialities at all, but enormously important considerations. "If I were in search of a man," he would say, "of whom I knew nothing but that he squinted, bore a birthmark on his right hand, and limped, and I observed a man who answered to the first peculiarity, so far the clue would be trivial, because thousands of men squint. Now, if that man presently moved and exhibited a birthmark on his right hand, the value of that squint and that mark would increase at once 100 or 1,000-fold. Apart, they are little. Together, much. The weight of evidence is not doubled merely. It would be only doubled if half the men who squinted had right-hand birthmarks. Whereas the proportion, if it could be ascertained, would be, perhaps, more like 1 in 10,000. The two trivialities, pointing in the same direction, become very strong evidence. And when a man is seen to walk with a limp, that limp, another triviality, reinforcing the others, brings the matter to the rank of a practical certainty. The Bertillon system of identification. What is it but a summary of trivialities? Thousands of men are of the same height, thousands of the same length of foot, thousands of the same girth of head. Thousands correspond in any separate measurements you may name. It is when the measurements are taken together that you have your man identified forever. Just consider how few, if any, of your friends correspond exactly in any two personal peculiarities. Hewitt's dogma received its illustration unexpectedly close at home. The old house wherein my bedchambers and Hewitt's office were situated contained, besides my own, 2 or 3 more bachelor's dens, in addition to the offices on the ground and first and second floors. At the very top of all, at the back, a fat, middle-aged man named Fogart occupied a set of 4 rooms. It was only after a long residence, by an accidental remark of the housekeeper's, that I learned the man's name, which was not painted on his door or displayed, with all the others, on the wall of the ground-floor porch. Mr. Fogart appeared to have few friends, but lived in something as nearly approaching luxury as an old bachelor living in chambers can live. An ascending case of champagne was a common phenomenon of the staircase. And I have more than once seen a picture, destined for the top floor, of a sort that went far to awaken green covetousness in the heart of a poor journalist. The man himself was not altogether prepossessing. Fat as he was, he had a way of carrying his head forward on his extended neck and gazing widely about, with a pair of the roundest and most prominent eyes I remember to have ever seen, except in a fish. On the whole, his appearance was rather vulgar, rather arrogant, and rather suspicious, without any very pronounced quality of any sort. But certainly he was not pretty. In the end, however, he was found shot dead in his sitting room. It was in this way. Hewitt and I had dined together at my club, and late in the evening he returned to my rooms to smoke and discuss whatever came uppermost. I had made a bargain that day with 2 speculative odd lots at a book sale, each of which contained a hidden prize.